We're holding on mem chest, I'm in bays, six lines from the bottom. We were learning yesterday about the whole matter of fats in an animal's body. When do we say that they can be considered a valid sealant for a hole in an organ, and when not? So we had Bav telling us that it's a difference whether it's tohor or whether it's kosher fat or not. And he said it's not really so much kosher or not, it's whether it's the type of fat that a domestic animal would be non-kosher, does not seal, and therefore even in a wild animal, that corresponding fat, even though in a wild animal all fat is kosher, nevertheless it wouldn't. And he said the reason is because it doesn't stick so tightly to the organ. We talked about yesterday that chaylev is, according to Rabbi Shmuel, krum v'niflaf, there's a membrane on it, and it peels off easily, and the fat itself is hard as well, we talked about. And Rabbi Akiva had added the point that it's choice of, that it's spread out over the organ like a sheet, a curtain. Okay. So continuing on that topic, the Gemara says, Amar Nachman, chaylev ha'osik ha'koyva, fat that is shaped like a hat or a helmet, meaning that it's rounded, that's not considered to close up a hole. So even if this fat is, so even within fats that are mutter, and we said before, all fats that are also are not a valid sealant for a hole, but here we're saying even something that where the fat is mutter, because of the shape of it, because it's shaped in a, because it has a rounded shape, then therefore it's not a valid, therefore it doesn't validly plug up a hole because of its shape. The classic Mishnah that Rambam explains that maybe it's two different things. Maybe it's when you such fat is not plugged, and it so happens it's shaped like a helmet. But really the reason would be because of the properties of that fat where it doesn't stick so tightly. Whatever the case, what are we talking about specifically? Hepa, where what fat are we talking about? So two versions. One version of what the Chachamim said is it refers to the nodules that are located on the rectum. So we're going to talk about soon in the Gemara about cases where there's a hole in the rectum of the animal, and what the implications of that as far as the trachis. Now, if you're in there along that, there are bits of fat that are like dots, like there are dots here and there that are rounded and stick out. So we're saying that those don't stick so tightly to the rectum itself, and therefore we can't say they plug up a hole. So talk about sometimes a hole in it is not a problem. We're going to get to that soon. We didn't have the rectum after all as one of the things in the Mishnah that said a hole in it creates a problem, but we'll see in the Gemara soon. But in any case, if you have a hole in a way that would be a problem and the fat on it covers it up, then that's no good. But I'm not all. Others say that we're talking about the character of the libra. Others say we're talking about the fat over the heart, the pericardium, where they're also, if the heart nearby there has a hole, then the fat won't plug it up effectively. In fact, actually, we learned yesterday that Tosfos would say that anyway, fat on one organ doesn't protect the fat on another organ. So according to Tosfos, there's nothing to talk about as far as the lung. Definitely the pericardium wouldn't be able to plug up a hole in the lung. What we mean is even to plug up a hole in the heart, that wouldn't work because it doesn't adhere that tightly to the heart. More on this topic about different kinds of fat. The Gemara continues. Omer Rava, Shamis Minim Rav Nachman Taut. Rava says, I heard from Rav Nachman, who was one of Rava's rebbes. I heard from him about two different types of fat that are on the stomach, specifically that are on the kava, the fourth stomach. We talked about yesterday, my float this would be small, and Rabbi Akiva, whether the fat on the kava, on that stomach, is also or not. So now, Rabbi says, in that connection, Rabbi Nachman told me about two areas of fat on there, chinsa or bar chinsa. One is called chinsa, the other one is called bar chinsa. And he told me, chad sosim, chad lay sosim. And he told me one of them is considered to be a good plug for a hole, and the other one is not. In other words, one is kosher, one is not. The lawyer Dinah, hey, Nahu, but Rava says, I don't know which is which. Now, by the way, we said before that Rava had, we learned yesterday that Rava had wanted to argue because the Sheshas holds that either kind is a valid sealant, Therefore, because of that, and because of Torah Chosar, one of them for Israel, he wanted to be Makhtar, no matter what. And the Papa pointed out to him that you can't do that. So, first of all, you have the opinion of Rab, and look, we're talking about an Issur D'oraisa over here. So Tosfos says, it seems that Rava changed his mind then and accepted that point, because now he's saying, indeed, that one of these kinds of facts on there is, in fact, not going to be considered a good closure for a whole. Okay, so Rava says, I don't know which is which. Well, let's figure it out. Rav Huna bar Chinin, Rav Huna b'Reder Nachman, Omer, bar Chinsa Sosin, Chinsa Loi Sosin. The answer is, first of all, let's say which one is which. The bar Chinsa is going to be the one that is a valid sealant for the whole. The Chinsa is not. You don't remember Rav, which is which, but we'll tell you that's how it is. The bar Chinsa works, the Chinsa doesn't. The Simona, Omer of Tovos, the Tovos says the Simona, a simon for that to help you remember which one is which. Remember the expression Yofa Kayacha Ben, Kayacha Ab, the power of the son is stronger than the power of the father. The original context of that is Rashi refers to a Gemara in Shavuos that talks about a case where a son is able to collect something from the when you're collecting from your son, you're collecting a debt that somebody owed you and then passed away, and you're collecting some of your assignments, you have to take a Shavua. So then you have a difference. You have a difference in that regard, whether the claimant is himself, the original lender, or the father, or whether it's his children claiming from the children of the borrower. Where there are cases where they don't need a Shavua for it. So we see that the son has a stronger power than the father. So now we can use that over here. We can use that expression also to help us remember over here. Bar means son. It's a bar chinsa, which means the son of the chinsa, and that helps us remember that it's a bar chinsa that works for this purpose and the chinsa doesn't. Okay, now that we figured that out, now we got to define what are they actually. Hey chinsa, the hey bar chinsa. Which is which? What areas of fact are we talking about? So the answer is Toshma. We can prove from the following point. The Omer of Nachman. Rav Nachman says that, like this, we talked about yesterday, Machlokes of Rav Shmuel and Rav Akiva, about the fat on the keva. So now it comes out over in later times, the Jews of Eretz Yisrael versus the Jews of Bavel disagreed about who the halacha is like in that. So in Eretz Yisrael, they would eat certain fat on the keva, which in Bavel they would not. So Rav Nachman says, in whom mechal achli, look, the Jews in Eretz Yisrael, they even eat that fat because they hold that it's chalif tover. They hold, as we said yesterday, like Rabbi Akiva, to be exact. We said yesterday, we ended up saying that you have Rabbi Shmuel's ancestors, and Rabbi Akiva holds that's a fact to be also, it has to be Tosav, Krum, V'Niklaf. And then Rabbi Shmuel disagreed with them and said, you don't need Tosav, just Krum, V'Niklaf. So according to him, the fact on the Keva is in fact also, whereas according to his ancestors and according to Rabbi Akiva, it's Mutter. Well, then the Bnei Eretz Yisrael follow that view, and they say that fact is Mutter. So says Rav Nachman, Odidan Mistam Nami Loisasin. For us, shouldn't that at least be considered to close up a hole? Fine, we don't eat it. We don't eat it because we hold... We hold like Rabbi Akiva and like Rabbi Shmuel's ancestors that it's also. We hold like Rabbi Shmuel rather than it's also. But nevertheless, at least the fact that we see that Bnei Eretz Yisrael consider it to be mutter to eat, then it should mean at least for us in Bavel, fine, we're not going to eat it. But nevertheless, to that extent, we should consider it like Chelev Tohar, and therefore it should be considered to close up a hole. So the Rashba explains basically because it's not Tosa, but it doesn't spread out like a sheet. So, and after all, we said, as we learned yesterday, that it's not really a distinction of whether the fat is mutter or also to eat. It's really a difference of what the properties of that fat are. Well, very well, this fat is not tosav, it's not spread out like a sheath. It's more tightly adhering to the skin, to the flesh, to the stomach in this case, and in that case, it should be fine. That's the Rashba's point. The Ran makes a different point that, you know what, when Bnei Bavel are not eating it, it's not even necessarily because they hold the halacha is like Rabbi Shmuel's ancestor, like Rabbi Shmuel. It may be that they hold that it should be mutter, but because of the Gzera, they because of a minug, then they don't eat it. So fine, at least it's a minug, but at least that shouldn't be a reason to actually, that it shouldn't even seal up a hole at all. Then on top of that, also, Achronim point out, Rabbi Akiva Eger, and then, And the innocent Eibeschitz points out another point as well. We said before, Rav and Rav Sheshis argue about it, so therefore that's another reason it's a suffix. And therefore, Rav Nachman is saying that that at least for us, we should find, maybe we can't eat it because it's a suffix and an isidoraisa, but at least to the extent that we should say that if there's a hole in the kava, that fat should close, should be considered to cover it up, and therefore the animal would remain kosher, that at least we can do. That's all the points of Rashi. So those are all different explanations within Rashi that Rav Nachman is saying that, look, given that B'nai Eretz Yisrael eat it, at least for us, B'nai Bavel, we should allow it to plug up a hole. Tosfos has a different explanation based on something in a few lines of the Gemara that Rav Nachman is making a statement, not a rhetorical question, as Rashi has it, rather as a statement. Yes, you should know, B'nai Eretz Yisrael actually eat that fat. They hold on the keva. They hold it absolutely mutter. However, for us, B'nai Bavel, not only are we not going to eat it, but we're not even going to consider it a sealant for a hole. So depending on how you learn what Rav Nachman is saying, then so if you say Rav Nachman is making a rhetorical question like Rashi, then it would mean we have to find out which fat is it on the keva that they eat in Eretz Yisrael, and then we know what the Bar Chimsa is, which we say can close up a hole. On the other hand, if you say Rav Nachman is making it as a statement, then it would mean that he's saying there's one fat over there which they eat, but for us it doesn't even plug up a hole, but there's a different one which in fact would, and that would be the biochemistry. So the Gemara says like this. If you look at the shape of the keva, that fourth stomach, it's shaped a little bit like a letter C, which in Gemara terminology, then it's shaped like a bow. So you have the outer curvature of it, which is called the kashta, the bow, and then you have the inner curvature of it, which is less curved, and kind of resembles the bow string. So that's what the Gemara calls them, the bow and the bow string, respectively. So the Gemara explains that kashta. When we talk about the fat that's on the bow side, on the outer curvature of the keva, kula amalei pligid osur. There's no argument. Everybody would agree that it's osur. Because it is, Rashi explains, it's only, you have along the middle line of the keva where that fat is actually attached, but other than that, it drapes over the rest of the keva on both sides. So therefore, it fits even Rabbi Akiva's more lenient definition of chelev, that in order for it to be chelev, it has to be toisav krum v'niklach. Well, very well, this is. It only has one area of attachment along the midline of the keva. So therefore, everybody would agree that that's osur. Ki pligi di yatra. The machlokas would be as far as the one on the bowstring, the one on the inside curve of the keva, whether that's considered chelev or not. So again, so B'nai Bavel then would hold like Rabbi Shmuel that say as long as it's krum v'niklach, well this fat over there has a membrane on it which can be peeled off. Therefore, by Rabbi Shmuel's definition, it's chelev. Rabbi Akiva. And we said yesterday, Rabbi Shmuel's ancestors would hold that it also needs to be tosav. It has to be draped like a sheet, and here it's not. So that would be the machlokas. So B'nai Eretz Yisrael would eat it, whereas B'nai Bavel would not. So that's one version of how we distinguish between them. So again, the idea would be then that the one that everybody agrees is osur is the one that definitely does not plug up a hole because it's toisav, because it's like a sheet of fat. The machlokas would be about the one on the inner curvature, that's the machlokas in B'nai Eretz Yisrael and B'nai Bavel, whether to eat it. So there we would have before that Rav Nachman is pointing out that nevertheless maybe it concealed the hole. According to Rashi, he's saying a rhetorical question, if they eat it, at least you should consider it a sealant. According to Tosfos, we would be saying, according to Tosfos, in the first version also, Rav Nachman is saying it as a rhetorical question, but now we have a second version. Ikadami, because there's a second version. The Iyatra Kalamalai Tzigidisharim. The one that's on the bowstring side, on the inner curvature of the keva, Kalamalai Tzigidisharim. That kind, everybody agrees, is mutter, because everybody holds, like Rabbi Akiva, that it's not a problem unless it's toisav, and on that side it's not toisav. The Tzigidah Kashta, going to the second version, the Machlokas would be about what's on the bow side, on the outer curvature of the keva. Where again, so it's attached only on the midline, so and the rest of it drapes. So the B'nai Bavel would hold that, look, it's not completely draping. It's not like some peritoneum, which completely drapes and doesn't really have on the internal organs itself, doesn't really have any points of attachment. Its points of attachment are all on the sides of the body, whereas here you have it is actually attached to the cava in the middle. So therefore, the B'nai Eretz Yisrael held that therefore there's not a problem with it, as opposed to the B'nai Bavel held that there is a problem because most of it is draped. Now, Rashi points out then that if you follow that second Lashon, then we're not going to be able to make Rav Nachman's statement about the Chimsa and the Bar Chimsa work. Because if Rav Nachman would allow even the bow side to be considered a ceiling for a hole, how much more so the one from the bow string side, and then you wouldn't be able to distinguish between chimsa and bar chimsa. So necessarily, then Rav Nachman's statement could only work with the first version of what the Gemara is saying. It actually goes on to point out, based on a relevant Gemara in Pesachim, that also that the first version is the one that's accepted la halacha. Because the Gemara tells us in Pesachim that one time Rabbi Baba Chana was eating the fat from Iyatra, and then when Rabbi Ivya walked in, then Rabbi Baba Chana covered it up because Rabbi Ivya was from B'nai Bavel, who hold that it's also. So in other words, so that follows only the first version, that Yatra is the one on the both swing side is the Machlokas. If you say like the second version that everybody agrees that Yatra is Mutter, then there'd be no reason for Rabbi Baba Chana to cover it. So, in short, it's a matter of an issur, of a potential issur d'oraisa. So therefore we go l'chumra. And Tosafos also points out, according to the second lashon, we would also have to say that Rav Nachman's statement about not plugging up is not meant as about what they eat versus for us it doesn't plug up is not a rhetorical question, but a statement of fact. There is a fat which they eat. Nevertheless, for us, it doesn't plug up. But meanwhile, the fat on the other side, since both we and they eat it, then that would be and that would plug it up. So not like Rashi, who says that then you can't make Rav Nachman's distinction between chimsa and bar chimsa work. According to that, according to Tosfos, you could make it work according to that second version as well. Okay. Next, more on this topic of B'nai Eretz Yisrael eating that fat. Now, so the thing is that when it comes to the fat of the iyatra of the bowstring side, so on the one hand we're saying B'nai Eretz Yisrael according to the first version, which again Rashi is saying is accepted by halacha, the B'nai Eretz Yisrael eat it, B'nai Bavel do not. However, you do have an issue that right on top of it is chelev, which is definitely also according to everybody because it's tosef krum v'niklaf, namely the peritoneum. So what do we do about that? So the Gemara says, Ki hod amr of Ivya, amr of Ami, mekamtsin. What we do is we cut off the upper layer of this fat of the iyatra of the bowstring side, because then you have it's right next to the chelev akerev, to the chelev shal akerev, the peritoneum, and therefore we have to cut off part of it in order not to get any of that chelev that's also, and then we can eat the rest. The same way Rabbi Yanai said in the name of a certain old Talmud Chacham, all we have to do is mekamtsin, we have to cut off a layer of it. But then the rest of it, the rest of it on the iyatra side would be mutter. And the Gemara continues. Omer Rabbi Yehuda, it's not just a theoretical statement. Omer Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda says, as a practical matter, I was one time standing as a Talmud in front of Rabbi, Kamsu v'holule, and I saw that they cut off a layer of that chalev and threw it away v'holule v'ochal, and they gave the rest of it to Rabbi, and he ate. Showing that when we're saying mekamtsin is actually practical halacha lemaisa, for those who eat the iyatra fat, then they would be able to do that, provided they cut off that layer first, so they don't get any part of the chalev shal akerev together with them. So the Gemara continues. Shamed and Rav Chanina have a koi kamed and Rav Chanina. Now, similarly, you also have the servant of Rav Chanina was one time standing in front of him. When they brought him fat from the Yatra. Omalei, and Rav Chanina says the same thing. Kmoitz, cut off a layer of it. And give the rest to me that I can eat it. Now we saw that this Mesharis of his was like hesitating, like, are we really supposed to do that? Are we supposed to eat that fat? Omelets that have come in the cells in Bavlar. Evidently, you're one of the Bnei Bavel who hold that all that fat is also. So in that case, fine. Gum shoddy. In that case, go cut it off, flush with the all the way to the base, all the way to the root, and throw it all away because according to you, you're not allowed to eat it. And fine, I'm not gonna have you serve me something that you yourself hold as also. In practice, the posts can say, nowadays we don't have this distinction anymore between Bnei Eretz Yisrael and Bnei Bavel. Pretty much in all areas of Halacha, we follow Bnei Bavel, and so it is over here. The fact on the Yatra side is, is also in general nowadays. People don't usually eat kava, don't usually eat the stomach of an animal nowadays anyway, but whatever. So in practice, pretty much all the fat in that area is also. There are actually in Shulchan Aruch it mentions that you also have this fat that's stuck to the keres, to another one of the stomachs. So here we were just talking about the keva, the fourth stomach. There's a different stomach over there, the keres, the first stomach, which we're going to talk about in the Gemara soon. And then you have this fat that's stuck to it, which is underneath the peritoneum, the prisa. So the Mechaber says it's also, and then I'm going to add that is the universal meaning, except for Bnei Rhinos, except for the Jews who live in the cities near the Rhine River, where there they hold some of that fat as mutter, and it's fine. Shaklar Hodelahem Zaka and a certain old distinguished Talmud Chacham taught them that's mutter, and therefore they're allowed to eat it. Interestingly, that Amma points out that even in places where they hold its usur, if they have kalim that we use from people from rhinos who do have that fat, we don't consider those kalim to be treif and have to kasher them, because the fact is they themselves hold its mutter, and therefore we don't have a basis to say that for us, even though the rest of the Jewish world doesn't eat it, but to say ab kedei kach that the kalim are non kosher, we wouldn't say that. The Gemara continues, Tanya of Shimon on the Lama, the name of Ayin Shiniflu, if the intestines have a hole in them, the Lecha Seitamton, but there's the mucus that's on there that covers up the whole chera, then the animal is kosher, because the whole point of holes in the internal organs being chera is things are going to leak out into the body cavity. If you have this lecha, this mucus that covers it up, then it remains kosher. So it must is my lecha. What kind of mucus are we talking about? What we mean is the mucus layer that's stuck to the insides of the intestines, that which comes out only with pressure. When you want to clean the intestines to prepare them for eating, you have to forcibly press on it to get that layer off. That's the kind. It is used tightly enough to the intestines that therefore it can be considered a good sealant for a hole. The Gemara continues, Gmiri Chavraya, Rab Abba, the colleagues of Rab Abba learned the following din from Rab Abba. And the Gemara interjects, Manu Rab Zera, who was the colleagues of Rab Abba, would be Rab Zera. But Amrival, others say it was the other way around. Chavraya, Rab Zera, the colleagues of Rab Zera learned the following din from Rab Zera, Manu, and who would that be, Rab Abba? So according to both versions, Rab Zera and Rab Abba both know the din, but the question is, who taught it first? And who learned it from you? So what is it? Amar of Abba, Bredi of Chiba Abba, Hachi Amar of Chiba Abba, Amar of Yechanan, Halacha Kirib Shimon Gamliel B'Treifa. The Halacha is like Rib Shimon Gamliel as far as a din in Treifa, where we just said as far as the mucosal layer. The Halacha Kirib Shimon V'Evel, and the Halacha is like Rib Shimon as far as a din of Avelus, which we're going to talk about in a minute. So he taught those two dinim together. You have a number of words over here in the Gemara in parenthesis. The Omer of Abba and Rav Chiya Abba Omer are all in parenthesis, and Rabbi Shaya Pick takes them out because if you look at the parallel Gemara in Moed Cotton says that Rav Zera learned it from Rav Abba, and some say that Rav Abba Breid Rav Chiya learned it from Rav Zera, and therefore so how could you have over here that Rav Abba says in the name of Rav Chiya Abba? On the other hand, there are different Jewish stories over here. Rashi does have that Jewish story, so fine. So Rav Abba is not the same as Rav Abba, as Rav Abba, the son of Rav Chiya. And he learned what Rav Chiya Bar Abba had learned and then had taught. There's a different Jewish story over here. In any case, so the halacha is like Rav Shimon Gamliel as far as Trefa, so that's the halacha Rav Shimon Gamliel with Trefa, Hodam Morim, what we just said, that he says that if there's a hole in the intestines, and you have this mucosal layer on them that adheres very tightly to the intestinal wall itself, then it's considered a good sealant for a hole, and therefore a hole in the intestines at that point will not make the animal Trefa. Rav Shimon Be'evo, Mayhi, what do we mean the halacha is like Rav Shimon, as far as the Dinim Avelos, is as follows. Ditznan. Now we learn in the Mishnah, it's actually Tanya, it's supposed to be a Braisa. So what happens if a person has passed away and one of the relatives heard about it only several days later? So now there's two possibilities. He could sit Shiva where he is, but here we're talking about if he wants to join his relatives in the Shiva house, but it takes him a couple of days to get there. The question is, does he count his own 7 days of Shiva, or does he pick up from where they're holding? So in other words, so the mess passed away and was buried on Sunday, let's say. So Shiva is going to last from Sunday until the end of, in order not to get Shabbos involved over here, let's say. So the burial was on Monday, let's say. They're going to get up on Sunday. So now the question is, though, he shows up in the house, let's say, only on Thursday. So does he now have to start sitting his own Shiva beginning from Thursday and ending from Wednesday and ending with the following Wednesday, or does he just go with the schedule as the other Avelim in the house are doing, and he just picks up with them and gets up when they get up? So the Braisa says Kol Shloisha Yom Rishonim. If he comes anytime during the first 3 days after the death, which 3 days is like the strongest part of the Avelos, then it depends. Bami Makom Karev. So if he comes from someplace nearby, where he would have been able to get there with on the first day, and now he comes Monei Mohan, then he counts with them. He doesn't start 7 days of his own. Instead, because in other words, Rashi explains, the point is, if he lives so close and he could have gotten there within the day, then it means he could have known of it right away. They could have sent him a message so he knows about it that day. So therefore, Avelos is right away chal on him. So therefore, some Monei Mohan, therefore he counts the Avelos with them, and he doesn't do his own. But if he comes from a further away place, then he has to count his own count. He has to start. That she has to start Shiva from when he came there and found out about it. Rishonim discussed. We mean that Taka, he only found out he first came to the house and then he found out. Or what if he found out on the way? And then you also have different understandings of Rishonim about what exactly is the difference between whether he's Makom Karev and Makom Rachak. Whatever the case, Mikan Ve'elach, now, that's during the first 3 days. Then the Braisa continues, what about if they've already been sitting 3 days? Afil Abavim, Makom Karev, even if he's coming from a close place where he lives within a day's journey of there, Mona La'atzma, he has to count for himself 7 days. Once he's already more than 3 days into the Shiva, then the Tanakama of this But I say, saying he's going to have to do his own schedule of Avelos, and he's not going to get up when he's not going to be able to get up when they do. But Reb Shimon says no. Afilu b'yom ha'shvi, even if the new oval comes only on the seventh day, the last day of Shira, b'mon makom karev monei mohan. Nevertheless, if he comes from a close place, then he can count with them, because the fact is, when he came, the Avelos is not over yet. Truly, the more intense part of it is already done, but nevertheless you still have some Avelos, and therefore he can join in with it. Tosfos points out, I mean, you get up on the morning of the seventh. So how would he have there be an opportunity for him to come on the seventh and still sit with them? So first Tosfos talks about it to mean the night going into the seventh, where they're still sitting Shiva. But then Tosfos says you can have that the fact is that the when the Menachemim go, then you have then Shiva is over. But in other words, you can have, you can get there the first thing in the morning on the seventh before he's gotten up. That's it. Nowadays when people sit Shiva, Rachman Islam, you know, they have it, they dive in the last Shachris over there in the base of Olo, and then after that they have the whole minute with the knocking and the nails and then telling and ordering him to get up and then going around the block before all those things. So then at that point Avelis is over. Now if the new Olo comes, then you're going to have a different gideon. But up until that point where they are sitting, then Rav Shimon is saying he can join in with them even though it's almost the end of the Avelis. So now we're saying that Halacha is like Rav Shimon, and therefore he doesn't need to start his own count of Avelis. In general, we have a rule called Halacha Kedibra Meikol Be'Evel. In general, we have, as the Gemara is going to point that out soon, and at the bottom of the further down on the Amud. That in general, whenever we have a machlokas of the Chachamim about dinim of Avelos, we always go according, always, or almost always go according to the more lenient opinion. So here, the Shimon is being more lenient, so we follow him. So the Gemara tells in this connection, Amar Mandavu, one of the Talmidim, having heard this, and Rashi says that by the time Ravina and Ravashi composed the Gemara, it was a long time later, they didn't know who it was anymore, which is why they just have to say Mandavu, somebody they can't identify him by name. Anyway, he said, Ezgi the eight the Esach, may I have the schus to go to Eretz Yisrael, the Agmar l'Shmaitim of Puma Demara, to be able to learn this teaching from the mouth of its author. In other words, like this, we heard in Babel that this is what Rav Abba says this Talmud, I would love to be able to have the schus to go to Eretz Yisrael to actually hear it in person from Rav Abba. Kisalik, so sure enough, he did move to Eretz Yisrael. Ashkel Rav Abba, Breda the Priya Abba, so he found Rav Abba, the son of Rav Chiya Abba, where we said before the din was said in the name of Rav Chiya Abba, and in the name of Rav Yechanan. So sure enough, he finds his son Omalei, and he asks him, Omamar Halacha Rav Shimon ben Gamliel the Tzreifa? Did you, Rebbe, say that the Halacha is like Rav Shimon Gamliel as far as Tzreifas? This point about the mucosal layer of the intestines being a good plug for the hole. Omalei, so Rav Abba says, no, in that connection, actually, I said the halacha is not like him. What about so ein halacha amri? I said the halacha is not like Reb Shimon Gamliel. So the Talmud asks, what about Reb Shimon the Avel Mai? What about, I also heard that you said the halacha is like Reb Shimon in Avemus. Amalei said, Abba says, plugged him in. The fact is, there's a machlokas among the Amoraim about that. The Itmar, as it was said, Rav Chista Amar Halacha, V'chein Amar Rav Yechanan Halacha, Rav Chista and also Rav Yechanan say the Halacha is like Rav Shimon, but Rav Nachman Amar Ein Halacha, whereas Rav Nachman says the Halacha is not like Rav Shimon. Well, the Gemara finishes off. Ein halacha k'Rav Shimon Gamliel b'Tzreifa. The halacha in the end is not like Rav Shimon Gamliel as far as the matter of Tzreifa. You need actual facts or something to seal up the whole, not just this mucosal layer of the intestines is not considered to be a good plug, and if there's a hole there, then the animal is safe. Provided, we did talk about before, there are parts of the intestine where you have they're wound, they're coiled one on top of the other, and you have fat between them, so then the fat is a good sealant, and we also had actually where you can have where one coil has a hole in the next one, there also the animal will be kosher because nothing's leaking out into the body cavity. Anyway, the halacha is not like Rav Shimon Gamliel, that the mucosa would be a good sealant. On the other hand, the halacha to Rav Shimon Be'evel, the halacha is like Rav Shimon when it comes to matters of Avelos, because the Omer Shmuel halacha kedivrei HaMeikel Be'evel, as is, we have Shmuel telling us that the halacha is generally like the opinion that's Meikel as far as Evel, and here it is, it's a great kula that even the guy showed up almost at the end of the Avelos, and nevertheless he doesn't have to sit full Shiva on his own, he can just join in together with them. Next, getting back to the continuing of matters of Tzreifus, the Gemara says, Omer Rav Shimon Bachia, Makifin b'nei me'ayin. We can bring together and compare things in the intestines. So if we have a hole in the intestines of the animal, and we don't know whether this took place before or after Shita, so we can make a hole in a nearby area over there, and we can compare them and see if they look the same. And if they do, then we know that just like the new one was made after the animal was shechted, the same way the other one would also be after that, and therefore it has no implications for Tzreifus. What we mean by that, by Bnei Me'ayim, does it mean many of the other internal organs, or does it mean maybe specifically the digestive system? So the Gemara tells in this connection, Hanu bnei me'ayin da'osu l'chamei d'rova, intestines like that, or kishkis, or whatever, internal organs like that, were brought to Rova with a shayla, like there was a hole in them, akfinu, so he did that, he made another hole and compared them v'lo yidnu, but they didn't look similar. Well, on the face of it, that means the original hole was there while the animal was alive, and therefore the animal should be treated. However, also the Mesharshia Bray, however, the Rava's son, the Mesharshia, came along, Mimash Mishbahu, and he was massaging and palpating the new hole that Rava made, the Idmu, and now they looked more similar. So now Rava has a basis to declare it kosher. Amalei, so Rava says, Menolacha, where did you get this idea from? Amalei, so the Mesharshia says, Kama Yoda, think of it, Kama Yodi Mash Mishubahani. Think of it, by the time this intestine was brought to you, to you, Rava, how many hands have already massaged and palpated and touched it, Mikame Delaisa Kame Demar, before it was ever brought in front of you, Rebbe? So in other words, I realize that you're not just going to have to check whether the hole, in order to check whether the holes are going to look the same, you're going to have to do the same kind of thing. In fact, the Beis Yosef points out that if we know for a fact that the original hole was not massaged and palpated like that, then in fact you can't say that you can do mishmush on the new one, because yeah, the whole point is to make them similar, and here it wouldn't be. So Rava was very impressed. Amalei, so Rava says, Chakim b'ribet treifus to Rav Yochanan. My son is wise in the dinim of treifus like Rav Yochanan. Rashi says two explanations about this. We also had this expression earlier in the Masechta about another son of Rava, that it means either Rabbi Yochanan was known to be a particular expert in treifus, or it means that Rashi's first explanation means in everything. As wise as Rabbi Yochanan is in all areas, kola tara kola, my son is just as wise and just as knowledgeable in specifically in treifus. Now he's not saying, of course, that he's not in others as well, but just now he had a demonstration of how wise and understanding the Mesharshia is in treifus. Rashi's second explanation is Ritakamim, within treifus itself, Rabbi Yochanan particularly was known to be expert in treifus. Later on in the Masechta, we have an example where Shmuel sent him many, many camel loads of questions about Shilas and Hilchas Treifus. So we see Rabbi Yochanan was particularly expert in that, and therefore Rava is comparing his son Rabbi Mesharshia to that area, to that level of expertise. Now, so here we were just talking about comparing holes in the intestines or in the digestive system in general. What about as far as in the lung? So the Gemara continues, similarly, Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar, both say Makifin Bereya, in the same way, we can compare as far as the lungs. Now, Rashi points out, we learned a few blocks ago, that in any case, also again, the Bergik checks the lungs first when they're inside the chest wall, first when they're in their place in the chest, and afterwards when they're removed, and he feels around on them for Silchus and then abnormalities like that. So then, of course, there's been Mishmush, and of course, if you have reason to suspect that a hole was caused by that, or by his knife cutting away things or whatever, then that's one thing. We're talking about where you don't have that reason to suspect it, but you find a hole, so now we can make another hole, and we can compare them and see if they look alike. So you can do that. Amar Rava, but Rava says Lo Yamarin Ela Ba'Oisa Aruga. However, that would only work on the same side of the lung. In other words, as we learned before, you have the right lung and the left lung, and each one has a different number of lobes. The row of lobes that runs down the side of each lung is called an aruga, which literally means like a garden plot. Because, so to speak, you have a garden plot and you plant vegetables over there and they stick out of the ground the same way on the two sides of the lung, on the sides of the lungs, you have the lobes sticking out as though like they're growing from within it. So Rava says you can only compare within the same aruga. So if you have it, you found a hole in the right lung, and you don't know whether it was there when the animal was alive, make another hole in the right lung someplace else and then compare them. But not, you can't compare with the left one. The Rif has a different explanation. The Rif says that aruga would mean the lung as a whole. Continues Rava, Avel me aruga la aruga, but to compare from one aruga to another, namely according to Rashi, different sides of the lung, Loi, then you can't do that, because then there may be enough difference between them that the holes are going to look similar, but really they're not. However, the Gemara says, however, the halacha is no. You could even You could even compare from one side to the other side. Fine, there may be minor differences, but it's not major enough to make a difference to mess up the comparison. So according to Rashi, that means from one side of one lung to the other. And then what it means, according to the Rif, it means you could even compare from the lung of one animal to the lung of another animal. However, within that, only midaka la daka, only gasa la gasa. However, that only works from daka to daka and from gasa to gasa. Now, usually daka would mean small animals, sheep and goats, and gasa would be large animals, cattle. So Rashi's first explanation is that's what it means. You can check from one to so you have a case of a hole in a lung of a sheep. You can take a lung of another sheep and compare it to him, but not between the lung of a sheep and the lung of cattle, because those are two different. But you can't compare between daka and gasa and between gasa and daka. So according to Rashi's first explanation, that means to compare across different major divisions of animals between cows and cows on the one hand and sheep and goats on the other. There's too much difference in the appearance of the lung, where therefore if you have a hole in one and a hole in the other, you may think they look the same, but really they don't. One was there when the animal was alive and then not. Rashi's second explanation, Rashi's second explanation is that it means that to gasa and daka, doesn't mean different species of animals, it means the parts of the lung itself. As we learned a few days ago, the basic structure of the lung is you have the uma, the body of the lung, which is called uma, the mother of the lung, so to speak, and then you have the unos, you have the lobes that stick out to the right and to the left. So now, gasa would mean the uma, and daka would mean the una. So according to that, the idea is you can compare between one una and the other, even on different sides of the lung, but you can't compare from the uma to the una or vice versa, because there the difference may be, there you may think that they look similar, where really they don't. Tosfos, on the other hand, points out that no, if it actually meant uma and una, then it would use the expression katana and gdola, the small and the big. So the fact that it uses the word gasa and daka suggests more, like Rashi's first explanation, that it means different species of animals. The Gemara continues, Abaya and Rava dahanu tavayu. Here's another din about comparing holes. Abaya and Rava both say that you can also compare holes as far in the windpipe. We learned earlier in the parak that there can be a point where the windpipe has enough of a hole or a cut or whatever in it that the animal would be chafer. So now we can do the same kind of thing, make another cut or hole someplace else, and compare them and see whether it appears whether they appear different than the original hole was there when the animal was alive or not. And similarly, the same way as with the lung, where we said you have restrictions on what kind of comparisons you can make. Similarly, over here, Omer Papa Lo Yamon Ela Ba'Osim Cholim. That would only apply. You can only make the comparison within that cholim. A cholia, as we learned before, means a group of three rings of cartilage. As we talked about a number of times in the Masechta, the windpipe is made out of. You have a tube which is the actual windpipe itself, and then it's held open and made that it constantly stays open, but it's flexible by rings of cartilage, where you have a ring and then a ring and then just muscle and then another ring and then just muscle, and within each ring itself you have it's thicker. Thicker on one side and thinner on the other side. It thins out as it goes around the windpipe, and one side of it is thin. And in fact, with most of them, as we learned before, the rings don't even go all the way around the windpipe. With most of them, the rings actually only go part way around, and the rest of it is held in place around the windpipe by a band of cartilage. So Rashi says that the Now, in particular, we're talking about, let's say, for example, so one example we learned earlier in the parak, there can be a case where you have a hole in the windpipe the size of an iser, which is a certain coin, and then we said the animal is chafe as a result of that. So now, if we're not sure whether that hole was there before, now it actually points out a hole the size of an iser, you wouldn't be able to make in just one ring. There's not enough room for it. Therefore, a cholia over here means a set of three rings. So it means then you do that kind of thing. You make another hole in a different set of three and compare and compare the two holes. So you can only do that within that same cholya. Avam cholya, the cholya loy, but you can't do it from one cholya to a different one because they look different, and therefore you might mistakenly think that the two holes are similar when in fact they shouldn't, and in fact they're supposed to be different. However, the Gemara says, again, the Hilchsa, the Halacha, is not like that. Afilu mecholya lecholya. You could indeed compare between one cholya and another. Only bar cholya, the bar cholya. You could also validly check from one bar cholya to another. Bar cholya is, again, the side where the ring of cartilage thins out. You have one side where the ring is thicker, and then you have where it thins out as it goes around the windpipe. So the thicker part is called cholya. The thinner part is called bar cholya. So if you have the animal comes to you with a hole in the windpipe, in the cholya, in the thicker area, then you can compare with a hole that you're going to make in a different cholya, and vice versa. But when it comes to when you can't compare from the cholya to the bar cholya, that wouldn't be avaloy mecholya the bar cholya, but you can't compare. So you can compare from one cholya to another and from one bar cholya to another. Avaloy mecholya the bar cholya, avaloy me bar cholya the cholya. But you can't do a valid comparison between the cholya and the bar cholya because one is thick and the other one is thin. And therefore, it's going to look. It's going to look similar. Where really it shouldn't. And therefore, you're not going to be able to tell whether the hole was there before shechita or not. So there's another example where we're able to compare. Where we're able to compare to figure out whether a hole was there before. All right. More dinim about punctures in internal organs. The Gemara says, the rectum. So this is the last part of the intestines where the waste comes out of that. Shenikva. So now what Ze'iri says, if that has a hole in it, sheira, the animal is still kosher. Because the thighs support it, meaning it was the whole yahama there, the thighs and all the muscles around there. That plug it up effectively, and therefore, so now, in other words, if there was a hole over there, then waste would leak out into the body and set up infections and poisoning. But no, because the yerechayim, all the thighs and the muscles around the thighs over there, all protect it very effectively, and therefore nothing's going to leak out. Okay, so the Gemara says the kama, fine. How much of it can have a hole? That it wouldn't be a problem. In the area where it's actually stuck tightly to the thighs, then beruboy, even if most of it is punctured, then it's still kosher. That's one explanation. The other, according to that, even if most of it is punctured, then it would still be kosher. There is a different explanation that Mephoshim have, that what it means is the other way around. It means that how much of it has to be left, and the answer is ruboy has to be, left. So according to that way of looking at it, if half of it was completely cut through, it would be treifa, and only up to half would it be kosher. Whereas the other way of looking at it is that ruboy means that even if most of it is gone, and even if most of it is gone, then it would be kosher. So that's in the area mokamad dovok, in the place where it's actually stuck tightly between the thighs and the muscles. Then shaloyba mokamad dovok, but in the area where it's not so tightly stuck, the mashu, then even a tiny hole is going to make it treif, because then again it's going to leak out of there. And there, as we learned before, you do have those nodules of fat on it at that point, but we said those are not considered to be a sealant because they're rounded and they don't plug it up effectively. Okay, so that was how. That was how they reported it in. So that's what we're saying, that's the rules. However, Amrur Rabbanan Kamedi Rav Meshmedi Rav Nachman. They told over this statement to Rava in the name of Rav Nachman. So Rava tells them, that can't be right. Lavni Amin Lachud. Haven't I told you previously? So Rashi points out, as a practical matter, this Mokamad Jobuk, Rashi points out, you have the spine above, you have the bone, the tailbone and everything are surrounding on both sides. And then you have, and underneath, you have cartilage, so therefore there's no room for anything to leak out over there. Anyway, so we're saying that again, there's a difference in that area where even if most of it were even ruble, it will still be kosher, depending on how we define that. And then anywhere else, then even a tiny hole will make a tick. But when they told it over to Rava, Omar, so Rava says, "Lav mi amin lachu, haven't I told you? Latit lubeis, bufi sriki, don't hang empty bottles on Rav Nachman, meaning don't attribute to Rav Nachman things that are empty, things where there's no, that are incorrect." Rav Nachman did not say that. Hochi Amar Rav Nachman. Rather, I'll tell you what Rav Nachman said. Mokam Adovik, in the area where it's stuck between as Rashi says, between the spine and the thigh muscles and all that. I feel a little cooler kosher. Even if the entire chalcholus, the entire rectum was removed over there, then it would be kosher. Because again, it's closed up by all the structures around it, and nothing's leaking out into the body. However, the Gemara says, that would only apply, be kosher, as long as there's left an amount to grasp with the hand. So, how much is kedei tfisa? Amar Abaye, kimloi bakda b'torah. It means the size of a bakda, even in a, we'll explain in a second what a bakda is, even in a large ox, then that would be enough. How much is a bakda? Rashi says it means one finger. So according to Abaya, as long as you have one finger's length of the chacholis that is left intact, then we're going to say that it's good. On the other hand, many Rishonim argue and say that no, a bakta is actually four etzvos. So according to that, then it would mean a bakta would be more like a fist, and that would be four etzvos. And the post can talk about that would be actually you scale it to the size of the animal. So it would be like that. Right. So that's the din. So most of the chacholis can be missing as long as you have this bakda left. But this is all only in the area where it's protected by all of the structures around it. Otherwise, a hole in it is going to make the animal treif. And again, fat on it is not going to be able to, fat on it is not going to be able to plug it up because that fat is rounded and doesn't work. Tosfos a few blocks earlier refers to a point we had also on Daf Mem Dalet. We had an expression today, Tfisas Yad, where we were talking about over there what's considered the Tirbutz Avesh, where does the pharynx end and the esophagus itself begin? And we said over there, Tfisas Yad means four etzbos. And Tosfos had pointed out that he would say that it means that he kedei tfisas yad means four etzbos as opposed to so it doesn't mean the same thing four etzbos in both places. The Tosfos had discussed that one. Okay. Next, we said in the Mishnah another type of treifa is we said a keres apnimis. We said the inner keres, the keres being the first stomach of the animal. If there's a hole in it. We said two things. We said if there's a hole in it, or if most of the outer portion of it is ripped open. So we have to figure out what is keres apnimis. Nosin Barshila, who was the head Shochet in the city Tzipori, he gave edus in front of Rebbe. Rebbe lived his last years in the city of Tzipori. The Gemara tells us elsewhere that Rebbe had used to live in a city called Beis Sha'arim, but when he got older, and he wasn't feeling so well, he moved to Tzipori because it's high up in the mountains and therefore the air is better over there. In any case, so now, Nosin Bar Shila, who was the head Shochet of Tzipori, he gave edus in front of Rebbe, Meshum Rav Nosin, in the name of Rav Nosin, Ezi Keres Apnimis. What is the Keres Apnimis of our Mishnah, where even a small hole in it will make a treifa, will make the animal treifa, is the part that's called in Aramaic Sanya Divi. Sanya Divi literally means hated by wolves. So Rashi brings two explanations from his Rebbein what part it is. And Rashi's first explanation he brings from his Rebbe is that it's what's called in English in medicalese it's called the cica. It's at one point from the intestines there branches off a long pouch which is closed off at one end sort of like the human appendix. And according to that first explanation in Rashi, that's what's called sanya div. He brings from Reb Macher, an earlier Rishon who says the same thing. So now, why is it called Sanya Divi? It actually explains. It's so disgusting and it's so scrawny that even wolves, even if a wolf attacks an animal and eats it, it won't bother eating that part. So that's one explanation. And Rashi is that the Sanya Divi is the Sika. Then Rashi brings a second explanation. It means it's actually part of the stomach itself. There's a point over there where when they're cleaning out an animal after they sheft an animal and they're dissecting it and everything, and there comes a point where they cut open the keres, where they cut open that first stomach to remove all of the partially digested food that's in there. So therefore, according to the first explanation, so Sanya means hated, Devi, whatever, means wolves. In Hebrew, the word for that creature is Zaev. In Aramaic, it would be Deva. According to the second explanation, Sanya does mean hateful and disgusting. Deva means to flow. This is the area, Rashi says, where they would cut the keres and all of the partially digested food would flow out. That would be what we mean by Sanya Devi. So then that would be called, so that area would be called keres apnimis, says this Nos and Rashila. And the Gemara continues, V'chein Amr Rav Yeshua ben Korcha Sanya Divei, and Rav Yeshua ben Korcha also says that it's the Sanya Divei, the Sikum, according to Rashi's explanation, according to Rashi's first and preferred explanation, and a part of the rumen itself, according to Rashi's second explanation. Now, though, we have other opinions. Rabbi Shmuel Omer is Sturmcha de Karsa. Rabbi Shmuel says that the Keres HaPnimi of our Mishnah is the Sturmcha of the keres of the rumen. So now Rashi says the word istoncha is a foreign word, but I don't know. Rashi says I don't know what it is. The Shittim Kabbalah takes out those words, but any adamahu, it means what we think of as the word stomach in English ultimately comes from a Greek word, where the original Greek word meant something like a mouth of. So strictly speaking, the word stomach in English originally meant the beginning of the stomach, and then over time it got extended to refer to the whole stomach. So in the same way over here, Rabbi Shmuel will be saying, "Stomcha de Karsa would be the entrance, the initial part of the keres, where the food first comes in. So that would be so that would be, according to Rabbi Shmuel, that would be what we mean by the keres apnimis of our Mishnah. Next. Rab Asi Omer Rabbi Yechanan. Rab Asi says in the name of Rabbi Yechanan, here's another way of defining it. Mokum Sar Yesh Bekeres. There's a certain area in the Keres which is a narrower place than normal, and that's considered the Keres HaPnimi. The Eni Yedei Ezu, however, Rab Ami says, or maybe Rabbi Yechanan says, I don't know what it is. So we have so far several different definitions. We have the Sanya Divei, which Rashi has two explanations what it is, although his preferred explanation is Sikum. We have the beginning, the initial place where the food first enters the keres, and then we have this unknown narrow place in the keres. So then Rav Nachman Yitzchak says, in effect, then you might as well say that the keres has fallen into the well. In other words, if we don't know where that narrow place is, then we can't really define what the keres apnimi is. So the Gemara says, though, Amar Rav Acha Bar Rav Abba, Amar Rav Asi, Min HaMeitzir L'Mata. I can define for you what it is. It's from the place where the keres becomes narrower and then downward to there. Downward meaning towards the esophagus, because again you have the animal hanging up by its hind legs when you're skinning it and cutting it apart. So that would be considered the Mokum Tsar. Then would be the place from where it starts narrowing in the direction of the esophagus. And why would it be called Keres HaPnimi? Is because that part of the keres is hidden behind the ribs. The keres, if you look in an animal, part of the keres is hidden behind the ribs, and then the back of it is already beyond the area where the ribs end. So therefore, the area that's covered by the ribs would be called keres apnimi. Okay, another definition of Yaakov Vanachmeni Omashmo, Mokum Shein Ben Milas. The definition of keres apnimi of our Mishnah, where it's a tiny hole in it will make the animal chafe, is where there's no wool. As we learned previously, some of the digestive organs have on their inner surface, they have little hair-like structures called villi. And the purpose of them is to give more surface area for absorption of nutrients and whatever. So now, so you have a part of the keres where you have such villi, and you have a part which doesn't. So now, Rabbi Yaakov Bar Nachmani is saying, in the name of Shmuel, the area that has that does not have the villi is the keres apnei. Rabbi Avinu Amar Gniva Meshmei D'Rav, and yet another definition, Rabbi Avinu says in the name of Gniva, that says in the name of Rav, Tefach bevesh samach lakeres, zuhi keres apnimis. The last tefach of the esophagus closest to the keres is the keres apnimis. Which earlier on Daf Mem Daled we have two different ways of understanding it. One was that it meant the last tefach of the esophagus, and the first and another explanation the Gemara had said there means the other way around. It means the top tefach of the keres after the esophagus. So in other words, yeah, the esophagus goes into the keres. So are we saying the last tefach of the esophagus, or are we saying the first tefach of the keres? The different explanations the Gemara had said that means keres apnimi. And again, it would be called pnimi because that part is hidden behind the ribs. Now, so we have all those different definitions, but Amri B'Mar Rava, the Chachamim in Eretz Yisrael said, B'Shmei Rabbi Yosi Ben Chanina, in the name of Rabbi Yosi Ben Chanina, they said, Kola Keres Kulai Zuri Keres Apnimis. No, you don't say a specific part of the Keres or a specific organ or whatever is. In general, the Keres as a whole is the Keres Apnimis, and any part of it that has a hole, the animal is going to be Tzeifa. So they zel keres achitzin. So what is the keres achitzin? Where the Mishnah had said that only if most of it is ripped, that would be boser achoyfas roiva keres. That would be the muscles that cover most of the keres, meaning in other words, facing towards the ground. So you look inside an animal, you have the keres fills up most of the left side of the animal's belly. So then you have below that, you have the muscles that protect it, that cover it all the way down to the underside of the animal. That would be what's called keres achitzan. That the keres as a whole, the rumen itself, would actually, the whole thing, according to this opinion, would be called keres apnim. So now Rashi explains, we call it bosar achoyfes roiva keres. First of all, Rashi explains that it's not so much the muscles, it's a thick membrane that protects the whole inside of the body, the peritoneum, as we were talking about before. So it actually extends from the chest of the animal all the way down to the thighs of the animal. So now, yeah, as far as the keres itself, some of it is hidden behind the ribs, most of it is under the peritoneum. So when we say keres achitzona, and we say that it covers roiv of the keres, that means we have to see how much of that membrane, how much of the peritoneum is in front of roiv of keres. Most of that, if it is ripped, then the animal would be treifer. If you have the point where after the keres ends, and then beyond that, the peritoneum is ripped, then the animal will still be kosher. So in other words, so all the other opinions so far had said that the keres apnimis is some part of the keres or some part of the digestive organs, and then within that itself you would have keres achitzonah, whereas according to the Yosi Ben Chanina, the entire keres is the keres apnimis, and the keres achitzonah would be the peritoneum. So the Gemara continues. Rav Baruch Huna Omar Mafrata. Rav Baruch Huna said another definition is that the keres apnimis is mafrata. So my mafrata. What does mafrata mean? Mafrata literally means the thing that is exposed. So Omar Abivya Hecha the paritabchi means the area where butchers, when they're hanging up the animal to take out the kishkis, when the area that they cut open, which is, in other words, they start on the underside of the animal near the tail, and they start cutting from there towards the head of the animal. That area is called that area is called bosar achoyfes roiva keres. So how do they do in practice? Yeah, with all these different definitions, what do they actually follow in practice? They held up Rav Bar Avuna that whole area, everything, that basically the entire underside of the animal is considered a keres apnimi, and a hole there is going to make it treifa. Omelet of Ashi Vameimar, said of Ashi asks a Meimar, and a Meimar himself was actually from Nahar Dor, So he asks him, so tell me, you're from Nahodah. Kohani Shmaitzamai, what about all those other teachings that we said before about what the Keres HaPnimi is? Shouldn't we have to be Choshish for them as well? Amalei Sa'amena says, you don't need. Kulu Shaitan with the Rav Bar Avuna. All of them are subsets of what Rav Bar Avuna says. When Rav Bar Avuna says, Mafrata, which is the entire underside of the animal, which is cut open when you're cutting apart the animal, all of those various definitions of the Keres HaPnimi are all included within that, because all of those are visible at that point. And therefore, so all we have to do is hold by the Rav Bar Avuna and say that any place on the underside of the animal where a puncture in any of the organs over there is going to make it tereif, and then that automatically includes all the other opinions. Okay, Rav Ashi says, what about Uzi Rav Asi Omer Rav Yechanan? What about Rav Asi's explanation in the name of Rav Yechanan, where he said there's a certain narrow place in the keres, but I don't know what it is. My, what about that? If we don't know the place, then maybe even you have beyond the mafrat, that might be a problem. Amalei Amena says, the fact is, Rav Acha Ba'Ava already explained that it means the part where the keres starts narrowing in the direction of the wind, in the direction of the esophagus. Fine, that's also included in the Mafrata. What about Rav Avina's definition that it means the last tefach of the esophagus? That's not opened up when you open up that part of the animal. You don't see that. And what about the Bnei Ma'arava, who said the entire keres is included? My, what about according to them? Shouldn't you have to be choshish for them as well? Those are not included in the Mafrata. Amalei Sa'amena says, fine, those opinions are certainly being more machmer, and they're being more machmer even than Rav Bar Avuna. But that doesn't change the fact that we in Nahodah are following Rav Bar Avuna. So yes, there may be opinions that are even more machmer than him, but we in Nahodah, says Amena, we don't have to be concerned about that. Actually, the Rashba points out, given that in Rav Avina's definition with two different explanations, did it mean part of the esophagus, or did it mean part of the keres itself? Then if you say it means part of the keres itself, then we don't have to say that he's arguing with Rav Bar Avuna. But basically, Rav Bar Avuna's opinion includes almost all the other ones, and therefore, and so when we're machmir and Nahodah, then it means that we're including everything in that. So Rashi says in the end, because we don't have, the fact is the halacha has not been passed like any of them. Therefore, we go to Chumrah and we say in the entire keres, a small hole would make it tereifa. Now again, Rashi points out, we don't bother checking for these trafers, because in general an animal has a cheskas kashrus, unless we have a reason to suspect there's a problem, then we're not obligated to check for these types of trafers. We've talked about before, actually, that nowadays sometimes there is a more prevalent problem with the caver, namely this problem that we talked about before, when the animal gets bloated because of eating too much grass at one time or whatever, and it gets bloated with intestinal gas, with stomach gas, and you have to vent it somehow. So how do you do it? So it's interesting, actually, in the tour, there's a note, we don't know who the author was, that was inserted into the tour that describes a similar problem in his time. The animal would overstuff itself with food, and then it would be bloated. So what they would do is, he describes that they would make a hole, and he says they would describe they're making an incision in the back of the animal and into the stomach over there, and then they would remove that, they'd remove that air that way, and then the animal would survive that and live a long, healthy life afterwards. So this is the author of this anonymous note says, so obviously, therefore, that must mean that such a thing is kosher, and therefore that can't be included in what the Gemara is talking about over here about the keres HaPnimi being a problem. So the different achronim talk about that and say it's not so simple. We don't even know who the author of that note was and whether he's a bar samcha, and the fact that we find nowadays that something doesn't cause the animal to die is not necessarily a solid proof, as we've learned before. Trefas are defined about how things were in the times of the Gemara, and different considerations like that. And nowadays, they also have this kind of thing, except instead of making an incision in the back, they usually make it in the side of the animal. And you know, they also have, as we talked about before, this huge, huge shilas about that. It came up as a big issue about 30 years ago, and the question was how it affects the supply of Chol of Yisrael milk, because the din is that milk from a non-kosher, from an animal, like tzreifa, is itself also to eat. So in the end, they worked out a system for animals that are going to be used for kosher milk and for kosher meat, where they won't do that. They won't do that incision and putting in a tube like that, invented that way. They'll use other methods. They can use certain things they can put into the animal's feed in the first place to prevent the bloat, and they have different things like that. They can palpate and massage it and whatever to get the trapped air out and different things like that, so as not to have to make such holes and have potential problems of tinnitus. Next. The Mishnah had said, Rabbi Yehuda had said, as far as the rip in the Keres HaChitzonah, we said, Rabbi Yehuda had said, in a large animal would be a tepach, and in a small animal would be roim, would be most of it. So what do we mean by gdola and ktana? What's the definition of gdola and ktana for this purpose? And you also have, we've shown and discussed the question, is Rabbi Yehuda arguing with the Tana Kama, or is he just clarifying what he says? So Amar Binyamin bar Yefes, Amar Rav Elazar, loy gdoyla gdoyla mamish, loy ktana ktana mamish. When Rabbi Yehuda says gdoyla and ktana respectively, he doesn't literally mean large and small. Ella, the rule is as follows: kol shen nikra b'tepach. If you have a rip in the keres or in the keres achitzoina, as we defined it before, we said according to the different tanoim and amoroim, there are parts of the keres itself that would be considered keres achitzoina, and according to, and we said. According to Rabbi Yosef of Chanina, the keres achitzonah would be the peritoneum. So when you have an animal where if there's a rip in it, of a tepach, the loy have a ruba, and that doesn't amount to the roiv of that area, then that zuri shishanina b'gdola tepach, that would be what we mean, that would be what Rabbi Yehuda means, that by a large animal a tepach. The ruba, the loy have a tepach. On the other hand, if you have, then it's a small animal, and you have a roiv, even though it doesn't amount to a tepach, zuri shishanina b'ktana b'ruba, that would be what the Mishnah means when it says in a ktana, then it would be roiv. So in other words, Rabbi Yehuda's definition would be a tepach or roiv, whichever is less, would make the animal tefach. So the Gemara says ruba, the loy have a tepach shita. Obviously, most of it is ripped or cut. And even though it's not a tefach, of course it's kosher. We always have in Torah rubay kekulo, that most of something is considered like all of it. So if most of it is rich, then obviously it's considered that all of it is. So why do we even need to say that? So the answer is let's see if we have a tefach b'mashul. Yes, the chiddush of the Mishnah is that it's only a tiny bit less than a tepach. If you were to have a tiny bit more than roiv, then it would be a tepach. So now it's a roiv, but it's almost a tepach, but not quite. Ma'ud tema ad de mikra ba tepach. You would think that until you have an actual tepach, lo have a treifa. Maybe it shouldn't be treifa. Now Tosfa says, well, why not? I mean, look, if it's ruba kekuloi, then what's the difference if it's a tiny amount? So Tosfos instead brings a different girsa from Rabbeinu Hananel, that it means that rather the girsa should be the ikat tefach u'mashul. What it means is that if the entire keres in a small animal is less than a tepach, so then the Gemara's question was, of course, you don't need a tepach, you don't even have the whole thing in a tepach, so we're talking about the entire keres achitzonah is slightly larger than a tepach. So maybe the whole thing is larger than a tefach. Maybe you have to have a tefach. Only a rip of a tefach would be a problem for Mashmalan, mm-hmm. And therefore the Mishnah is telling us that no, Rabbi Yehuda is telling us as long as you have roiv, then it's enough to make the animal chafe. Now again, whether Rabbi Yehuda is arguing with the Tana Kama or whether he's clarifying, that's another question, and therefore that will also affect the question of whether the halacha is like him. Okay. In this connection, the Gemara says, Amar Gniva, Amar Abasi, Nikula, what happens if instead of a rip, what happens if instead you have a rounded hole over there? So if that rounded hole, Kasela, if it's the size of a Sela coin, Chafer, then the animal would be Chafer. Why shouldn't he Matach? Because if you were to take that hole, that rounded hole, and stretch it, Tamad ala Tepa, then that would amount to a length of a Tepa. In other words, it comes out, and it comes out that the circumference of the stella coin is 2 tefachim. So now you stretch it out and you have one tefach on one side and the other tefach on the other side. So that's the point of Rashi. Tosfos has a different explanation that it means that actually what we would do is if we take the sella coin and we measure its circumference and we have a piece of string, let's say that's equal to the circumference of the sella, then if we lay that along the keres achitzona, then we will have a length of a tefach. And therefore that's considered therefore to be enough that so in other words it comes out according to Rashi the sella has twice the circumference of what Tosfos says. So in any case, the point is that then you would have a text. So the Gemara says, "Amar Abchiva Abel the Dini Fauci LeMinei Gniva." Gniva personally explained to me what he means is, and he told this to me. I'm Mabra the Nahavda when we were standing on the bridge in Nahavda, which he mentions that the Pashtos because it helps remember. Sometimes you remember a din more when you heard it in an unusual place. So he says, "Because Sela Sheira, but actually it's the whole of the size of a Sela." Then it would still be kosher. Yosin the kasela tereifa. Only if it's more than a seller, then it would be tereifa. The time of yosin the kasela, how much more would it have to be tereifa? I'm going to guess when the island slash kashiyasa with sipa the duchra. If you were to take three date pits, which with some of the flesh of the date still sticking to the date pits, and put them one next to the other, and they would just barely fit in the hole. Or if you do it without the flesh still sticking to them and they can fit in comfortably, then that would be more than a seller, and that would be the amount that now the animal would be tereifa. If you can't get those three date pits in there, then we would say that it's kosher. They talk about an interesting point. We sometimes talk about the question whether the fruits and things in the times of the Gemara are the same size nowadays as they were then. So nowadays, in fact, you take date pits usually, and you may find that actually they will fit in an area a lot less than a sella, a lot less than a tefach. So that may indicate that there is an example where things have gotten smaller since the times of the Gemara.
Yeah.